Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of What's It Like, where we interview folks from all over about all kinds of different experiences. So as always, my little disclaimer, this is one person's story of what this experience was like for them. Somebody else may have had a similar experience, but have a very different story to tell in response, and that's okay. This is just a window into what it might be like to do this thing. So I'd like to go ahead and welcome our guest for today. Thank you so much for joining us, Callum.
You are very welcome. You are all graced with my presence.
Yes.
I know that I can feel the love through through the audio, through your ears. I can feel it all. It's very nice. Thank you very much. It's warm.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So go ahead and tell us in a sentence or two, give sort of the elevator pitch of what are you going to tell our audience about today?
Whoa, I never signed on for an elevator pitch.
Well, describe it however you want.
For starters, I'm a comedian. We don't do elevator pitches. We are, this is going to be long form storytelling. So my tale, as it were, is going to be around my running of an open mic comedy night in my very specific area of England. And I realise that maybe some places that this goes out, England is in Britain, because Britain's a conglomerate of countries. And it all gets very confusing. And this isn't a British accent. This is what is called a Yorkshire accent. Mm-hmm. It's not, as I have had some Americans say to me, this isn't an Australian accent.
No,
it isn't. It's just very common, shall we say. This is sort of our equivalent of a yokel or a hick, I suppose. My accent is looked down upon by a great deal of the other British public. But I got massively off topic. That's a shock.
Yeah. No, that's all good. So you're going to talk to us about running a comedy night in your comedy nights, open mic comedy nights in your area. So let's start with, in case anybody out there doesn't go to a lot of comedy nights or open mic, what does this usually consist of? What did you have in your mind when you were like, this is what I want to start pulling together?
Well, I sort of came into the game quite late, really, because you find that most comedians get into it when they're, you know, in their early 20s, late teens. I always wanted to get into comedy, but there was always just that fear of kind of, well, what if I'm not very funny? Like, these, my friends laugh at me, but that just might be sympathy because I'm functionally wrong. So it wasn't until my 30th birthday when my ex bought me basically a ticket for a 2-day comedy course that I went, and I made people who weren't my friends laugh, and I was like, oh, this is really very enjoyable. I shall do this some more. And by happenstance, I knew somebody who had recently become a manager of a bar near to where I lived, and he put a post out on Facebook saying, does anybody know any musicians who'd want to have some regular gigs, sort of just performing kind of, you know, horrible background music that goes on in artisanal coffee shops and hipster bars? Just, you know, two guys, one of them's got an acoustic guitar, the other one has a box that he uses as a drum, that kind of horrible nonsense. And so I, now being an exceptionally humorous person who had learned how to do comedy properly, responded back just saying, if by musicians you mean somebody who's just done a 2-day comedy course and has a very solid 5-minute set, hit me up. And about half an hour later, he sent me a message saying, oh, do you think you can do an hour?
Oh.
No, I don't think I can do an hour. I don't think I can get anywhere near an hour.
I can do that same 5 minutes.
I can talk for an hour.
Times.
Yeah, I could talk for an hour. I can't guarantee how much it would be funny other than the 5 minutes that I've practiced. And it basically morphed and changed to me suggesting that we put on an open mic night for acts that were new and were looking to just get time, really, because that's the main... that's the main thing in any kind of art like that. It needs you to get time under your belt. It needs you to be able to interact with as many audiences as possible.
Yeah.
And have a venue where you can like there's obviously like there's comedy nights that are comedy nights, and if you did your first act at something like I think they have the Comedy Store over in America, don't they?
I think so, yeah.
So like the Comedy Store is generally speaking one of the bigger ones, and they do have newer acts on there, but it's more intended that that's where sort of professional comedians go and try things out. And if you don't have somewhere on a very small scale where you can go try things out, you're left with these really intimidating large venues, mm-hmm. where you just think, I can't do this. I've got 5 minutes just talking about the very emasculating size of my penis. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is going to fly. And so I wanted to give as many people as possible the chance to come and practice, whether it was established acts who wanted to just try stuff out, or whether it was brand new people, first gig, who was just like, I want to try and see if I can make people do stuff. And that was essentially how it all got started. And that was back in June of 2018 when it all started. And like spoiler for the end of the story, it did have to stop in February of this year, because if you know,
that makes sense.
The everything that's happening in the badness.
The everything. Okay, so you had this idea, and how did you and you kind of got roped into being in charge of this? Were you like responsible for finding people?
Yeah, I took that all on myself because I was still, I mean, so I did the comedy course, that was in February, and I got 3 gigs done between February and June, because I was also working full time, and it kind of went by the wayside until me and my friend got it organized. But I still sort of had connections to people who had been on the course with me, and also on another course that I'd briefly been on, which was a charity course, but was also definitely a pyramid scheme. So I won't say the name because I don't want to get sued. However, the premise was you raise money for a cancer charity. That's brilliant, amazing. Do that. That's mm-hmm. a brilliant thing to do. However, what you then do is you have to get 10 people that you know to pay £20 to come see the final show. Mm. So essentially what you're getting those people to do is get £200 that you give to the company. That doesn't go to the charity. That's for the company to pay bills and things. That's not, cancer's not seeing that money. Oh no, that's paying the tutor. That's paying any rents and things. Mm-hmm. To see, essentially come see you for 5 minutes, hope you'll be good, and hope the other 10 to 20 people are also good. If not, you've just blown £20 on 20 absolutely terrible new comedians. So I couldn't get anybody to do that, unsurprisingly. And I just thought, yeah, we'll drop out of this. But it did give me the vast majority of my acts for at least the first 3 nights that I ran. So, you know, I got mine out of that at least.
Yeah. Just for perspective, how big is the city or the town where you were doing this? Was it large enough that there were a lot of people to reach out to, or close enough to other places that it was easy for people to come in and perform and leave?
The second one. So it wasn't, it was a place called Halifax. And it was not, it's a town rather than a city, so it was mm-hmm. sort of moderately sized, and the actual venue itself was sort of on the outskirts. Okay. So it wasn't massive for sort of footfall traffic, as mm-hmm. they say in the trade. And so I think the most amount of people we ever had there was for our 1 year anniversary show. And that was maybe, at once, it was somewhere between 40 and 50 people. But they kind of, because it was a very long, it was a day worth of comedy, basically, we put on. So people kind of revolved, and we had different people coming in and out.
Okay.
And the smallest audience was, it's not worth talking about, it's fine. It was adequate. But the actual area was very well connected for a lot of acts that could come over from bigger cities like a Leeds or a Manchester, and sometimes even further afield. We did actually, by pure happenstance, we did once get an American comedian on. And purely because she was in Halifax, because that is where her family was from, and she was seeing her grandma. And I will give her a big shout out right now, because her name is Abby Denton, and legitimately amazing. I thought she was brilliant. Everyone that was there at the time loved her, all the acts and all the crowd. And I think that she should get her name out there more. Like, spread the word of Abby Denton. I believe she's on Twitter. Find her and annoy her and say, oh, that lovely Callum guy talked about you. He was really effusive in his praise. And he uses lots of big words that we don't necessarily understand.
Yes. Excellent. Okay. So especially for this first one, I guess, as you were preparing this, were you mostly reaching out to your contacts and inviting them personally, or did you kind of blast out an open call to everybody?
What I did at first was I basically made a Facebook group of everybody that I'd been on the courses with and just said, hey, I'm ridiculously new at this and decided to put on comedy night. This can only go well. Who wants to join? And that's how I got the acts for basically the first three nights. But when you kind of get into Facebook itself is really good for comedians to network with other comedians. And I hate that word network. It's absolutely horrible, disgusting word. It's the bureaucratic toss. But it does, the amount of Facebook groups that are out there, just filled with comedians, where you can put out a link to a Google form and just say, I'm putting on a night, I'm not paying you. If you want some stage time, please fill this in and I will look at things. And yeah, there wasn't any gig where I wouldn't have been able to overfill, because comedians want to comed.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. We want to get out there and be funny, because that's, like I say, it's time and it's practice and it's repetition. That's how you get better. You go and you do it more and more and more, and you become absolutely hilarious, or you realize that you're absolutely terrible and you give it up.
So did you have a lot of people coming back multiple times to perform?
Yeah, lots of people applied more than once for multiple times. I think the record stands at 5 times one person did it, I think. It's 4 or 5 times I had the same person back on. It might have even been 2 people, because I also put on a few various other nights as well in different areas, and I had some of those same acts on there. But yeah, once you can tell if somebody likes what you're doing with a night, with a venue, because they'll immediately come up to you afterwards, if you're a promoter and a host MC, as I was, and they'll be like, oh, like, this is brilliant, I'd love to come back. Whereas if they just come over to you, shake your hand and say, oh, it was really good, and walk away, they'd think, oh, they're probably not going to apply again. I don't think I'll ever see them again. Oh, well. And that's all right if they were rubbish. If they were the ones who were terrific, then you're like, oh, bugger, that's gone wrong. Oh, well, hope someone else comes along that's good.
Yeah, okay, so you made all the connections, you got everybody connected, and then you were hosting the night of. What did your duties look like on the actual comedy night itself?
So essentially setting everything up for the night, getting speaker checked, the microphone mic'd, getting the audience prepared that comedy was happening, because part of the issue, one of my big bugbears with the venue, is that they didn't ever really put any kind of advertising heft behind it. Mm. So I always felt, as with anything, like I'm sure you do it with your podcast, I do it with my podcast and with That Night and with everything else I do, you want to keep getting better and you want to keep getting bigger. If you're like, oh, I'm happy with this very low level of what we're doing, then it doesn't really feel like any progress is being made. You always want it to morph and change and improve and become a bigger and better avenue that a lot of people can get involved in. And yeah, the bar just never really put anything behind advertising other than once printing out some very generic flyers, and they would advertise it on boards outside and inside the bar that these were happening on these particular dates. So that was my bugbear of the situation. But it was able to, because there was a lot of regulars as well, you would see quite a few of the crowd coming back time after time. Mm-hmm. So you'd be able to, as a host and an MC, which I hosted / MC'd every single one of the nights bar one, where I decided to take a break, because maybe November of 2019. So I'd done, you know, a year and 15 months worth, every single one. I'd been hosting it, booking it, MCing it, setting everything up. And I just got a little bit fried. So I let one of the other acts who I was friends with, they basically volunteered to help and get everything sorted. I still booked the act, but he took charge of hosting the night and setting everything up for it. With comedians, you get sort of two schools, I've noticed, which is either they absolutely despise being an MC and they refuse to do it, or, like I find, it's one of the easiest jobs in the world, because I think it's partially down to whether you can piggyback off other people, essentially.
Yeah.
So if you can hear another act say a joke and think, oh, actually, I've actually got something that I know that I can jump on the back of, I could reference that in my next bit. Or if they get a reaction out of the audience and you think, right, I'm going to be able to zero in on the audience member and be like, oh, you laugh like a dying horse, etc. Then as long as you've got that, you'll be able to host an MC. Whereas some acts, particularly ones that just come on and do, you know, one-liner jokes, puns, just sort of straight, those old school kind of comedians, they especially tend not to want to do any kind of hosting, because that's not their milieu, where their heads are. They are designed to just go bam, 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 essentially reading off a script almost. And I envy them, because their ability to retain an insane amount of jokes just astounds me. Whereas I just go up on stage and just sort of wing it for 5 to 10 minutes and hope that something that falls out of me is funny at some point.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me, how did it go that very first night, the very first one? What made you think, yeah, I'm definitely going to do this again?
It was just the reaction. It wasn't sort of massively packed full in terms of audience, but it was sort of three quarters full. And it was a very quote unquote safe atmosphere. So I kind of started it off by saying, you know, every single one of these acts is new acts. This is kind of their second or third gig. This isn't going to see Eddie Murphy in his pomp. This is not a well-polished act that is going to come and entertain you and be amazing for an hour and a half. These guys are going to come on and maybe do 5 minutes, maybe a little bit longer, and they might stutter, they might fail. That, this is a learning experience for them, because I think that's also what a lot of, especially when people are in a group, if one person suggests, oh, let's go to a comedy club, and some of those friends think, ah, oh, we're going to see, you know, these, we're going to see some big names, and they come and there's Joe Nobody, who's just like, oh, so what's the deal with reclining chairs? And they just say, oh, this isn't what I was led to believe at all from the television. Everything I see on there, the audience are always finding it hilarious. And I love Kevin Hart. Why aren't there Kevin Hart? And those, that is kind of the worst aspect of doing it, when you get somebody who thinks they're getting something more than what they are. Like, you find some hidden gems in open mic comedy. Like, you can tell when you see an act and you think they are definitely going to go somewhere. But sometimes I don't think the audience necessarily gets that.
Yeah.
And sometimes they also, if they're not sort of prompted, they also don't get that this is a learning curve for them. So this is, they've got to, one of the things that I sort of prided the night on is that was a very rare occurrence, having a quote unquote a bad audience. It was, the audience itself was always very supportive. And if they could sense someone was dying, then they weren't, you know, they weren't going to boo them. They weren't going to heckle them. They were just, they might be silent, but, and some people might say that's worse, but that's why I will jump in and be like, oh, here's a quick quip, and now the next act. But yeah, it's the audience itself, kind of like, people hate it when I do this, but I'm very into the world of professional wrestling because I'm a very cool guy. And in the world of wrestling, it's very similar to the world of comedy, where an audience can make a show. So if an audience is just sort of the right amount of interactive and with the show, and they're there to kind of cooperate and not take it over, that is when, even on a very small level, you can have an amazing night, because everybody is sort of singing from the same hymn sheet. The act and the audience are all there together. And that's kind of what happened, I think, on the first night, is that everyone was on the same page, that, look, we know what we're getting in for. We know what this is. We're just going to have a good time and enjoy it. And there's also drinks available. So let's get hammered. And yeah, it was, everybody had a really good time. And it continued on from there.
Yeah. What did you do differently? How did you change things and grow in between, maybe especially the first and the second, but how did you continue to improve the nights?
It was more about, again, going back to those kind of Facebook comedy groups and doing that legwork to get the name out there, as well as talking to the acts and getting them to sort of bring the night up or recommend it, because on that level especially, it basically is word of mouth. Comedians talk to each other. So if I say that, oh, I've put my name down for Hilarity Fest in Wakefield next Wednesday, and you know, if three other acts go, oh, really, you've done, oh, I wouldn't have done that. That's a terrible room. That's not set up for comedy. That's a terrible audience. They're always drunk. It's a terrible host. He doesn't know what he's doing. And I'm not going to lie, there is definitely people in the comedy world who will hate me I don't dispute that, because even now, and having that, what was it, 20, it was about 20 months it ran for, I would still consider myself a beginner at both at the comedy level and also running a night.
Yeah.
I would go back to do it, but it was a constant learning curve. And getting to the point where I was getting established acts, especially when, so the worst night was where it, like, this is where I think my reputation probably took a hit. Mm-hmm. So it was November of 2018. So 5 months in, and it was just about that time that it was like, okay, this is seeming like it's a regular thing. The name of the night is out there. There's been quite a lot of uptake on people applying. And I got told by my friend, there's this company nearby and they've booked the bar for their Christmas work party. And it's on the same night as the comedy night.
Okay.
So they're going to come there for the comedy. They're going to come there for the Christmas party. And it's going to be amazing. And it's going to be brilliant. And you need to get some really good acts on to make sure they're there. Like, okay, right. So that's how I'll put it out there to the acts. Like, you know, this is going to be a Christmas party environment. There's going to be, you know, there's like 50 people there. The room was pretty much full. I'm like, right, okay. So I got some... obviously it's still not, you know, named these, because I was never able to pay anybody. Mm-hmm. that was never going to be what we're able to do, but these were people who were names around the West Yorkshire comedy scene. Like, they were well respected, they'd been doing it for years, and they sort of wanted to come on board and see what the night was like. So we got six acts and they're all very good, and get there on the night. And I'm starting to set stuff up, and yeah, everything's very busy. And a couple of the acts turn up, and one of the acts says, oh, I really don't like the way that this room is set up. I was like, no, because essentially the tables were all sat in a kind of U shape. So it would, half of the audience had the back to us. And so I obviously said, well, it's okay, I can just tell them that, you know, the comedy's happening at this time, and turn your chairs around, give each other space and stuff. Okay. So I did that. I did the 15-minute warning, started to interact with people a little bit. And once I'd done kind of the 15-minute warning, about 5 minutes later, say, about half of the room had left.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was a case of like, well, okay, maybe these guys weren't here for the comedy. Maybe they're just sort of, you know, they'll come back when the comedy's done. And so start the hosting, do the stuff, introduce the first act. And the audience just seems sort of totally uninterested almost. There's some mild laughs, but there's just not a lot of anything going on. And then the first act finishes, and then again about another half of the room leaves.
Oh my gosh.
So now at 25% capacity. And so it's about that point where I kind of put a bit of a stop to the show and just kind of said, is whoever organized this here tonight? And a young lady very sheepishly stands up, and I remember vividly her name was Kaylee. And I went over to her and I said, Kaylee, be honest with me. You didn't know this comedy was happening tonight, did you? And she couldn't even look me in the eye. She shook her head. Oh. And she said, no, they said they were postponing it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I just sort of said, that's fine. Let's just all slap on a fake smile and get through this shit. So I then introduced the second act. And to be fair, the second act, the remaining audience that were there did then kind of seem far more attentive, and good. she got some decent laughs. And then once she'd finished and was handing the microphone back over to me, all the rest of the people that were there stood up, and oh, Kaylee just said, I'm really sorry, but we're going to leave now. So
uh-huh.
You could have either It was one of those moments where it could have either completely crushed me, or I could have just seen it for the hilarious outcome that it was.
Yeah.
And luckily, I went with the second one. So as all the rest of the audience were leaving, I just stood by the door with my hand up and just got them all to high-five me as they left. just end that night as it was. And I booked 6 acts for that night. We got through 2. So it was a case of, so we can either do like a writing session or you can all go home. And they went home.
Yeah.
So normally it was a case that the night started sometime between 7:30 and 8 p.m. and they'd finish sort of between 9:30 and 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
This was done by 8:30.
Yeah.
Easily. And I just went over to my friend who was behind the bar and just sort of said, well, we won't do that again, will we? And there was never another Christmas party on a Wednesday.
God. Oh my gosh, that's like performer nightmare right there.
Yeah, that was... I just imagine if that happened at like a play.
Yeah.
If we're just like, now we're done. Bye.
we're gonna go.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll just keep going. Yeah, that was, and like I said, because that had quite a few sort of people who were also ran their own nights as well. And the first 2 acts on were newer acts as well. So I didn't even get the chance to have more established people on.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it was just a case of like, well, my name's going to be mud with some people now. Okay.
Oh.
And obviously, like I said, comedians talk. And I know for a fact that some people didn't have many good things to say about me after that. But I mean, in my defense, not my doing. I didn't book it. I just got told the information. I was but a humble arbiter. It is not my fault that the truth was not given to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But also, it's not the act's fault and it's not the audience's fault. There was just an array of miscommunication and let's never speak of it again.
Exactly. So I'm curious, you talked about how sometimes you see these people who you think, oh yeah, you're going somewhere. Has there anybody who, I know it's only been like, you know, not, you did it for, yeah, like 20 months. Has there been anybody who kind of has taken a step forward in that time, who started or did their second or third gig with you?
There's been quite a few that have gone on to really make a name for themselves and kind of definitely in the West Yorkshire area. So there's a guy called Nick Crooks. He's brilliant. He runs his own comedy night and I think he's just going to keep going from strength to strength. The guy who covered for me one time is a guy called Jack Vincent, and he's basically building like a sort of monopoly around the Yorkshire comedy industry. He's been sort of almost single-handedly trying to sort of kickstart comedy starting back up again. Given that most of Yorkshire is now going back into a lockdown scenario, we'll see how that goes, but he's putting in a lot of legwork and he's, like I say, almost single-handedly trying to sort of revive the scene.
Yeah.
There's an act who I actually didn't realise how long he'd been around, but he's had some level of, like, he's had a few things blow up on Twitter. He's a guy called Tom Little, and I remember seeing him, and I didn't know how long he'd been doing it, and when I saw him do his act at my night, I just thought, oh, this guy's amazing. And then when I got to talking to people about him and they said, like, how long he'd been doing it, then my thought was, why the hell did he come here? What's wrong with him? What a fool. Coming to my tiny little pissant town to do 10 minutes of amazing comedy to 17 people. Oh, what an absolute rube. Those are sort of the immediate three that I think of off the top of my head. But there's, you can also kind of never know who might catch on as well, because comedies like music and everything else really is a matter of personal opinion. It's very subjective, and it's why you can get acts that some people think are absolute hot garbage that will ascend the ranks and become megastars, and other acts who are amazing, pure comedic geniuses who will just potter along at the very lowest levels, just scraping by. But I don't doubt that somebody who I have had on and that those audiences have seen at that night, I don't doubt that there is somebody there who will at some point make it to some level of, whether you want to call it fame, notoriety, whatever, they will be able to make a living out of comedy. And that is just nice to see, to know that you've played a small fragment of a role in helping them get there, just being this one tiny little step that they took to get that little bit better, to carry on their path. Is just, that's kind of what I wanted out of the night. I never wanted it to become, you know, we're going to start off this open mic night and then we're going to have a absolutely massive velodrome and we're going to have all the biggest acts in the world and we're going to sell it out every night. I always want it to be a case of just trying to make it a venue and an area where new acts could try and get better and hone their craft and have it as somewhere safe for them that goes around that says, you can come and do this gig. This will be a good learning experience for you. And this is just how you'll, you know, this will help you learn your craft and become what you want to be and help you figure things out. I mean, it sort of got there. There was the actual reputation it got, which I kind of encouraged, was the Hunger Games of the Yorkshire comedy scene. But, you know, you either, it's basically a trial by fire, because some nights it would just be a case of you either lived or you died. That was it. Those were the two options at the nights. And that's also good as well. That's fine. Sometimes you need that. But that was always my end goal, is just having somewhere that people could come and learn. And hopefully, once the world resumes some level of normality and we can all start kissing each other again or whatever it is that normal people do without masks on, then hopefully I would want to get back into doing that somewhere.
Yeah, on kind of that note, yeah. So I'm sure that, you know, primarily the scene has just been shut down. Have there been other things that have people still been keeping in touch? Have Facebook groups still been active? Have people tried to organize virtual stuff? Although that's really different because you can't hear the responses. So I'm sure that's, you know, not the same. How has the scene been doing during the pandemic?
There has been so many Zoom gigs. I have not touched those with a barge pole.
It'd be so different.
Yeah, that's not just, that is literal dead air silence. That is just like, oh, I don't know if this joke has landed. That is essentially like filming a sitcom with no audience there. You can't determine when to start speaking again. You can take a fair assumption of how long someone might laugh for, but also you've then got, laughter is infectious. So when a few people in a room start laughing, other people laugh just automatically out of habit almost. Whereas if you're doing a Zoom gig, each individual person is doing that individually and your best joke might just get a kind of, that's quite good, yeah. And that's it. Whereas in an audience, they'd be on the floor, dying, barely able to breathe. So I also don't think it really, in terms of a more established act, that probably helps them keep their name out there. But for somebody learning the ropes, I think it just becomes a disconnect that you're not, you wouldn't really learn anything from it other than how to do your comedy down a microphone to your computer. Yeah. It's not what someone on that level needs. There have also been, so many podcasts. So many podcasts created. I did mention before, I have a podcast. I started my podcast in at the worst possible time, pretty much when Donald Trump got elected. It wasn't intended as that. And so as someone who is on the podcast scene before all this, I look at all these latecomers and I'm like, you weren't there. You weren't there for the hard graft of never having any listeners. And granted, I still don't have any listeners, but, you know, that's by the by. Ignore that. But you weren't there, man. You didn't struggle through the hard pod times. You've come in when podcasts are booming because nobody's got anything to do. You've just come along and tried to make your name. You didn't have to struggle through trying to be a political podcast for about 12 weeks before you realized you couldn't edit it in time and everything was already old news. Yeah, pro tip, guys, don't even bother. Unless you're literally going to live stream a podcast if it's about politics, just don't. It's just a pointless endeavor. You might as well just say, oh, Trump said something stupid. Boris Johnson said something stupid. Isn't that crazy?
And just leave it at that. That every week.
Yep, that's all you need to do. Oh, Donald Trump tweeted something offensive. Oh, what a guy. What a crazy kook. And then just leave it. It's not worth your time or your effort. Trust me. I know of where I speak.
All right. So as we kind of wind things down, this podcast is going out to probably two different sets of people. One who maybe have had some experience with this or might want to, once things are up and running again, think, I might want to run a comedy unite. I want to figure out how to do that. And then other folks who have no experience with this and never will. Like they're not in the comedy scene. They're not interested. Maybe they go see a show every so often, but they are not going to do this. So I'd love for you to maybe give some advice to somebody that you have, something you've learned that you can pass on to somebody else who might want to do this themselves in the future, as well as maybe something that would be good for people who are never going to experience this to understand. Or to know about this? What do you wish people knew? So address those two possible audience members.
I will start with the latter first. Yes. So the people who, like, I don't want to touch comedy with a barge pole. I want to sit and I want you to make me laugh, monkey man. That's all. Those people, if you can do what I mentioned earlier, don't go to a comedy night to harass new comedians. Be aware of what you're getting yourself in for. Some comedians will encourage heckling. At that point, heckle away, throw what you got at them. But if you are going to a comedy night with your friends and it's quite obvious that somebody is really uncomfortable and they're very new to this, you like, watching people's eyes just die in front of me before has been like, you precious little summer flower, look at you. You're not made for this world. Obviously, not all audiences are going to be wonderful, caring people, like I'm sure all of you listeners are. Like, I can feel that you're all good people and you're going to pass this message on. But there's still going to be dicks out there, and that's just the way it is. That's what the world is run by right now. So let's all try not to be dicks. Yeah? Yeah. Thanks, guys. In terms of people who might want to get into comedy, I would start off by saying, don't do what I did, which was do 3 gigs and then start running your own night, because my comedy learning tree is a gnarled stump that has not grown correctly. When everything wrapped up in February, I was able to kind of get back out onto the circuit somewhat. I did 3 or 4 gigs within the space of a week or two before everything clamped down. And you do need to get into that rhythm again. You need to be able to understand how to be you on stage. Like, I was still approaching things like I was hosting a night when I wasn't. I was now an act. And it does help you. It helps you more to do however long, do developing a 5 or 10 minute set and then getting into hosting your own night rather than doing it the way that I did, which was entirely wrong. And I just kind of fluked my way through it. And some nights are really good and some nights really bad. But if you were just thinking about getting into comedy, what I always tell people is just do it. It's just one of those things. What is the worst thing that can happen if you put a microphone in front of your face and attempt to be funny for 5 minutes? You don't have anyone laugh at you. You have somebody boo you. You have someone call you a rude name. Those are things that can happen on the street. You know, it's not going to be an awful thing. And if you make people laugh, it is addictive. Making a room of people laugh, it's a rush. It's an endorphin rush. It's a drug. It's why so many people keep doing it, even though we don't necessarily get paid for it. I have no aspirations that say I am going to become a world-renowned comedian. I do lots of other things where I will also probably not become world-renowned at anything, but if you think that you would get a buzz out of entertaining someone, maybe you're a podcaster, maybe you're, I don't know, a Twitch streamer, a vlogger, whatever, you can always parlay skills that you're already developing into doing comedy, because it's just about being able to have that communication with people, that ability to interact with them, just that ability to be able to make them feel comfy and know that they're quote unquote safe with you. You know, you're not gonna randomly leap off the stage and attack them. There are some acts that do that, and you know, I'm about those acts. Those are the acts that I enjoyed having on. Actually, that reminds me, three other acts that I really want to mention very quickly. An act called Tommy Tomsky, who is that kind of act. Like, he would jump off stage and he would bite you in the face and that would be the joke. That's it. He's an insane man and he is brilliant. There is also what I also really wanted, as well as things went on, my second gig ever was in a very weird venue. It was in like an ice cream shop, an ice cream parlor, which struck me as very odd, but I went with it. And there was a guy there called Sam Judd, and he had a stroke when he was, I think when he was a baby or when he was very young. So he essentially was pretty much, he was wheelchair bound and he couldn't speak. He essentially had the screen and the same kind of talking equipment that Stephen Hawking did, effectively.
Okay.
And he was one of the acts on that night. And when he did his stuff, I think he actually went on after me. I didn't do very well, but you know, that was fine. That was fine. It was okay. And he went on and he was just amazing. And as soon as he was done, this was when I was just sort of planning doing this night. But as soon as he was done, I went up to him and I said, I have to have you on. I must have you on my night, because he was just brilliant. Like, he completely subverted everyone's expectations, because like it or not, even these days, when a lot of people see someone in a wheelchair like that, their natural instinct is not to say, oh, he must be one of the acts. They would just assume, you know, he's someone in the audience.
Yeah.
And I had Sam on twice at my night, and the main thing that blew me away about him is some acts in that similar scenario, they have equipment where they can kind of basically touch a play button on like an iPad. So they'll have effectively a script written out and they can just boom, hit play, and they'll be able to roll through it, as it were. But what Sam's equipment, he would literally type out everything that he was quote unquote saying using his eyes. So if you sort of sat behind him and watched him, he was literally writing out his jokes and then sending them so that the voice box would communicate them. And his act changed slightly every time as well. So he'd obviously been creating new material. And I just thought that was really great. And the other act is a comedian called Benny Shakes, who has, oh hell, I think, Benny, I apologize when I never make you listen to this. And if I've got it wrong, I'm sorry. I believe he has cerebral palsy. And I don't think he'd necessarily done many gigs by the time that he did my night, but he actually came up with the formerly mentioned Tommy Tomsky. And again, he was just someone else who blew me away of like it, just his presence and his ability on the microphone and his confidence, despite not being very far into it. And he's gone on to do a lot more other things. He actually does a podcast of his own that I unfortunately can't remember now, so I will plug it at a later date. Sorry, Benny, but I've mentioned your name on an international podcast, so you know.
Yeah, you know, can find you.
Yeah, little victories, mate. Calm down. Don't have a go. Yeah, all right, thanks. But yeah, those are just some other acts that I wanted to mention and hope they don't track me down now and hit me repeatedly with sticks.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to close things out. But before we do, I want to give you a second to be able to plug yourself. You have your own podcast, social media, whatever you're sharing with the world. What would you like our listeners to be able to find you on?
Oh, well, you can find me pretty much everywhere. Don't try adding me on Facebook. I won't accept you as a friend. I'm very picky. But you can find the podcast, which I jointly co-host under my nom de plume of Hefty Cleft, because, like, you know, I don't want, like, my dad Googling, you know, Callum Jarvis Jones. Oh, this is a podcast. Oh, he's talking about porn. Okay, I'm a disappointed father yet again. And so that is called the Meanderthals podcast. And that is hosted pretty much everywhere that you can get a podcast. It's on Apple, it's on Spotify, it's on Amazon Music now. Yay! All the podcasters are really happy about Amazon Music. Hooray! Yeah, pretty much anywhere. Just look for The Meanderthals. You'll be able to find that. You can hear us talking about, don't bother with the earlier episodes about politics. Just like the first 12 episodes, just leave them. Just cast them to the wind. They were irrelevant when they got posted. So right now, you just be like, Anthony Scarrow, what? Who? What? Who? He was what? He did. Oh, my God. And you can, I basically run the podcast Twitter page. That is le_Meanderthals, because it was absolutely not because the Meanderthals was taken. It was just because, you know, le_Meanderthals. It just sounds so much classier, doesn't it? You know, just a real je ne sais quoi, as the French may say. I also have the Instagram page for the podcast, which is all one word, The Meanderthals. And you can also find my own personal Instagram, which I mainly use to try and pimp my voiceover work. I say voiceover, I do stupid voices now and again for like people who want voices for YouTube. Yeah. I've also done a couple of audio books. So, you know, if you look for Callum Jarvis Jones on Audible, you'll be able to find me on there and maybe buy some stuff and I get a cut. So if you've enjoyed this, give me some money, you freeloaders. So my personal Instagram is all one word, Callum, C-A-L-L-U-M, Jarvis, J-A-R-V-I-S, Jones, J-O-N-E-S, V-O. I'll just give you all time to write that down. Yeah. Just make sure you get that scribbled down, everybody. Just write that down on a long piece of paper. I have a lot of names. That isn't even my full name. I have another name as well, but you would never know it. I have four names. That is too many names for one man, but I have one.
Oh, awesome. I will make sure and put all of this in the show description as well. So any folks who did not take advantage of that time that you gave us to write them down can still find you. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today, Callum, and talking through this. This has been a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. All right, folks, that is our episode. I'll be back next week and interviewing somebody else about something completely different. So we will see you all then.